Aloha, Avakea. Mahalo. Yes, thank you very much for coming to this afternoon session. And it's going to be very impromptu. And I have to watch my time. That's why. So beginning with Kaleo Hawaii is the name of the radio program. Kaleo Hawaii was hosted and produced by me from 1972 to 1988 for 16 years. And it continued shortly after I left, and then ended because of difficulty getting native speakers to come onto the radio program. It was difficult enough just to have them say, yes, I'll come on public radio on the radio station, but just because we're down to about 40 native speakers left throughout the islands outside of the little island of Niihau, which even there are less than 60 people permanent residents on the island. Most of the population of Niihau now lives more permanently on the neighbor island of Kauai. So we are really down to our very last native speakers. But fortunately, during that period of 16 years from 1972 to 1988, I was able to convince a lot of our native speakers to come on the radio. You know, it was a bit threatening for lots of our older people because they would be in their senior years. However, I found that once that broadcast began to reach other native speakers, because my biggest fans, of course, were native speakers, and they would have been all senior citizens or older people. Of course, all the people at Niihau I know listen to our radio broadcasts. Now, this radio show started really when I first started to teach. I'm giving you all my age right now. When I first started to teach at the Manoa campus in the Department of Indo-Pacific Languages, is where Hawaiian language was housed. There was no degree in Hawaiian back then. But the students that I was teaching encouraged me, because I took tape recordings of native speakers to class. And so they were saying, why don't we share this with the public? Why don't you interview our native speakers live on a public radio? And KCCN Radio was, I think, 24-hour all Hawaiian music program. So we went to the owner of the radio station, and he agreed very hesitantly to allow us half an hour only every 2 weeks, because he wasn't sure if there would be an audience. But after the first month or so, because of course we had all these young members of the Hawaiian club there at the university, the Hui Aloha Aina Tuahine, campaigning and of course on the radio program, having all their grandparents and aunts and uncles listen in and write letters and call in, and finally we convinced the Sid Grayson of the radio station to allow us to be on at least once a week. So it served to be a good venue for reaching out to those people throughout our islands that could catch the radio station. Most of us could catch the radio. I know like my parents living in Waimea and Kohala district on the Big Island, the evening somehow the radio came in clearer. So this helped to bring more attention to our language, because we already knew by then that our language was going, and we needed to promote it and encourage it. And of course it served as a place where our new second language learners could get together by radio, at least, and hear native speech more conveniently, because getting together with them, you know, at their doorstep or in their classroom or wherever they may be, was very difficult. So the format was basically an interview program, and then we allowed phone calls, and phone calls were very interesting too, because then people could call in from wherever. The phone calls were screened, of course, and they would be all in Hawaiian. And this little video I'm going to show you now is the only record that we have of a video of myself. And I looked at my picture in 1985 and thought, my goodness, you'll see the difference. and it gives you just a brief idea of this radio program, sitting in the studio and interviewing native speakers. And that evening I was fortunate to have two native speakers, my own Uncle Joseph Maka'ai, and my other guest was Rachel Reitenauer. So let me just show you a bit of this. Thanks to Heather at Ulu'ulu, Heather Junior recorded this. And I'll move this as fast as I can, because there's a... I'll just jump around if you don't mind, because it's... Well, how did that happen? Did I move it? Now, Layla, we began our interview typically, and this is not what you would do at somebody's home, where I'd go right up and say, please, could you tell us your name, and could you please tell us where you're born and where you're from? You know, it's kind of an abrupt question at the beginning of a conversation. However, our kupuna, our people, could place themselves in this context of a radio show. So they expected to be asked those questions immediately. So she's talking about her background, coming from Punalu'u on this island. And then because her father is pure Chinese and her mother is pure Hawaiian, she's giving the Chinese name of her father. And then later on, I just asked her if she could speak Chinese, and she could. She learned it. I just asked her if she could please say something in Chinese, because she learned Chinese growing up. So I just asked her how do you would say, well, she said she used to take her Chinese, I guess, father and relatives, pure Chinese, speakers of Chinese didn't speak English, to the doctor and places like that, and she would serve like an interpreter. So how would you say, what is your name? And so she just said that in Chinese. And I asked her, what kind of Chinese is that? And she said, it's Punti. Now in Punalu'u, for those of you who know on this island, it's still a very good agriculture place, running streams, and so her father was involved in planting rice out in Punalu'u on this island. And then my uncle here is from the island of Hawaii, North Kona, and he heard of Chinese speakers of Chinese speaking in Hawaiian, but here in Hawaii, Chinese speakers speaking in Hawaiian have a way of speaking it in a pidgin form. So he's imitating how Chinese would use Hawaiian in Hawaiian language, but a pidgin Hawaiian. Chinese pidgin Hawaiian. Hawaiian pidgin. There would be historic keepers, typically. Akuna, Kinilau, and names like that. So anyway, this is... And can you imitate some of... Because he's kind of... O'oi pi mai, in Hawaiian we'd say ehele mai oi, but then we say o'oi pi mai. So that would be kind of an example and numerous, more simple kind of communication that was carried on in Hawaiian, Chinese Hawaiian pidgin, Hawaiian Chinese pidgin. What is the correct order there? And so, so this show was not only, of course, documenting our native Hawaiian speakers, but many cultural knowledge around what was happening in their upbringing. And most of our last native speakers were from very country rural areas. So the Kalea Hawaii collection, this kind of recording, every program, I tried to record every program that may have been about 3 or 4 or 5 maybe missing, is now numbered about 550 hours of tapes and number of 417 programs that we've had. We only use the university school schedule to host this program. So for example, we're trying to take out let me move this off the screen. Usable, I guess. This program had commercials, and then it ran for an hour and a half, and it's pretty long to handle just as raw stuff, as you know. So it's become a corpus of our last remaining native Hawaiian speakers from that time. And so I am trying to take out for various kinds of reasons. Here's an example. Last night we went to see the theater performance of this very classic Hawaiian story, La'ia i Kauai. It's a love story. It lasted 3 hours at the Kennedy Theater. It's entirely in Hawaiian. And for example, I had a guest on our radio program who recalled being a part of this story that was actually produced as a play when she was younger. So I asked her about it, and she recalled some of it, and I provided some of this tape to Kaliko Baker and the producers of the play. So this is just the audio. Oh, sorry. Here it is. So, La'i Kauai. There were twin girls, and one happened to be more pretty than the other, so I was thinking maybe they weren't really identical. And so just that that imitating of how this girl gets up at night when she's awoken by this fragrance of maile, and she calls out to her grandmother, and as she's calling out to her grandmother, she's saying, what is this strange fragrance that I smell? And the grandmother gives her advice. So this kind of use of Hawaiian in a kind of a calling in that voice that was used at the theater last night to interpret that portion, which became an important part of the play because it happened 4 times. There were 4 maile sisters that got involved in trying to wake La'i Kauai up. But if we didn't have recordings like this, then it would be pretty hard. It would be up to Kaliko Baker and Haile Baker to interpret. How would we call to a grandmother when you're falling, you're asleep, and how would the grandmother sound answering in this conversation going back and forth? So it's important to have, I guess, of course, that kind of information recorded. There are all kinds, as you know, just a whole myriad of kinds of registers of Hawaiian language that is recorded through this radio program in conversational form. So this little snippet here is about that generation was severely punished for using Hawaiian in school. And so this person is just giving the example of punishment And this is one of the items we used for our Native Hawaiian Commission report when President Reagan, Ronald Reagan, was there. That's how long ago this was done, but to show that, you know, there were some injustices done, and we would like to try and, you know, do something about it. So this is just one. So she's just saying that they were made to write on the blackboard in English, I will not speak Hawaiian. I will not speak Hawaiian. 500 times, she said. I cannot forget that I had to stay after school and write on the blackboard 500 times, and then I could go home. That I would not speak Hawaiian in school. So you have that kind of content that we have. We also have like dear old Auntie Alistair Makelua here. She's just talking about how she's noted as a Hawaiian song composer, for modern music, well, what we call modern Hawaiian music, not your traditional. Nevertheless, a very talented composer. And she's talking about a place on Kauai called Olohena. And so when we hear Olohena, say in other parts of Polynesia, like in French Polynesia, and I don't know if Samoa has Olohena, I think they might, like they have the word Hawaii, Savaii. These are words that we can connect to. Of course, this is in a song. And then her explanation, her inspiration of how she did the song. And in this speech, of course, it's just filled with all kinds of typical features of Hawaiian language and passive voices and stated voices that we don't normally, these are areas that might be difficult in, say, second language learning for English-speaking people. So most of our elders or native speakers were in their senior years, and they were female because most of them outlived their husbands. But we do have, of course, some male native speakers, guests of our radio program. And this gentleman here is from the island of Niihau. And people wonder how, if they had a whole different language or no. We all have the same Hawaiian language. But he's talking here just about his experience that he had heard from his father about going onto the island, a neighboring island of Lehua, uninhabited island, except for rabbits. Right now somebody released this creature there, but how the birds, the petrel shearwater birds, eggs were eaten and how they cooked them on that island on the rock. But this is his description of it. So just in that one few sentences, he uses this word apapapa, which is more a kind of a localized word they use for a flat surface. He later says, like the floor, where right here is as flat as the floor. That's part of the island of Lehua. And this particular rock, that whole island is basically made up of this rock. And he calls the rock Amimi. And Amimi is not a word that you find in the dictionary because it's not recorded. But it's a special kind of rock, and then he describes how they cook the eggs on this rock by heating the rocks with a special, well, there's not much vegetation on that island, but this plant that is also not recorded in a dictionary, the olive oil. And so how they use that to heat the surface of this amimi to cook the eggs, and then they took it back home to their neighbor, to their island of Niihau. So these are the kinds of cultural information that can be used in so many ways to also inspire us in developing our curriculum in the area of science and culture and botany and all areas of use besides just language. And so it just fits perfectly with Hawaiian medium education that we are now doing informal schooling. So right now my time is up and I'm going to be very good and stop here. And thank you. Yes, mahalo. I can't, yeah, there I see you. Yes, you are, you're the guy, you're the gentleman there, yeah.
Thanks for that talk, that was really informative. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about maybe some cultural reasons or maybe historical ones behind people's reluctance to participate in the radio program you mentioned.
Well, I think one is being in the pub, they know they're being heard by lots of people they can't even see. And I guess breaking the ice, there were a few brave ones that came up to the beginning shows that paved the way, because then others heard, and one of our first guests was a well-known musician, Johnny Almeida. So when they hear his name, they know who he is, they hear what he is saying, and he encourages his fellow speakers to participate. That kind of encouragement and support was very helpful. And I think most of our people by then understood that if they did not try to, you know, give what they knew in a short hour and a half or an hour, then, because I unfortunately, you know, lots of our people took these things for granted and didn't quite understand what was happening in the early 70s and 80s. And when they would hear another native speaker call in or talk, all of them have something to add to it. Yes. Yes, is that Margaret? Yeah. By ethnicity? By what?
No, I guess number of speakers and approximate.
The numbers. We have about 320 native speaking guests. Some of them were repeat guests. The most I've had maybe three or four times. Then many native speakers, I don't even know their names, who called in. Some I knew by name. They introduced themselves. Some they didn't. I didn't ask the name. They were just calling in and saying this, you know, and then thank you very much, and boom, boom, you know, like that. So, formal guests, about 320.
Fantastic. Sorry, this one.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yes. Well, basically, I was interested in what they were about, and starting off with, of course, their family, their name, where they come from, and that gave a lot of clues to how to begin some questioning. I tried to find out as much as possible beforehand. Lots of times, it was right there at the station is where I got to meet them for the first time. And the way this happened, they knew somebody, a friend, our relatives, and then this network, and they say, you call my uncle or my auntie, or here's a number, you have to get in touch with this person because they know a lot, you know, and I'll help you, I'll call them too. That kind of working. Yes. Yes, yeah. Okay. Sorry, I can't see too well. The lights are really bright.
Thank you very much for this language.
Yes.
What's the conversation back to stories or articles in the newspaper or requests for people to start writing?
Oh, yes, yes. Like, you know, the story of Kalua Iko'olau, the leper, the well-known story documented through Hawaiian newspapers. And in fact, the Baker, Mr. and Mrs. Baker did a play on that story written in the Hawaiian news. They know the families. They know all kinds of details that happened not printed in the paper. You know, all kinds of, yes, interesting tidbits, songs that maybe were about a girl who somehow became an orphan. I say orphan, but she ran off into the mountains and she lived up in the mountains by herself, and somebody and some cowboys discovered her or something. That's not really discovered her, but got her to come back to civilization. And that's all in the song. It became a song and well known. And one of my guests actually is related to that girl, and she knows the story and how it all happened. Things like that. Very interesting. Yes.
Do you think with this radio station, do you think obviously there's more awareness, that's what you were saying, about the Hawaiian language, but is there a sign that translate into more speakers?
I'm having a hard time hearing. I don't know if it's sound over here, but...
It's better if you're up.
Yeah, I can.
Do you want me to repeat?
Yeah.
Which you say?
Yeah, I was just wondering, you know, with the radio station, it was a way to give more awareness of the Hawaiian language, but does that translate into more people speaking it or understanding it, or is there a kind of statistics?
He's saying that the radio show increased awareness of the Hawaiian language, but he's wondering if one of the results was a larger number of people speaking the language.
Yes, it gave, you know, with the young people, right? Because it's really a young people's, to me, mission. To have the language live, we have to have young people who will carry it on. And they had to, first of all, be moved, I guess, in their souls, in their heart, you know. You can tell somebody, oh, your language is going and all of that, but they don't quite, you know, it's right in front of their noses too, right in their homes. And some of these grandparents never really had opportunities to express what they knew in their own language in that way, in their very natural way. They even, and some of them went to these senior citizen, you know, organization clubs, and when they went to this room like this and carried on activities, they do it in English, although they could speak Hawaiian. So it definitely made an impact, I think, on our young people, as I said earlier, who didn't even have contact. Many of them never heard native speaking Hawaiian. So it exposed native speech in a very quick and comfortable way in your home. You could just turn your radio on, relax, and listen in.
One more question.
Yep.
Would something like this work today in terms of the language capacity of the native speakers?
I think we would, well, of course, we don't have the number of native speakers. That's why our radio programs ended. So we would do something different. Is that what you mean, doing an interview program with?
Like you probably today do it as a web-based radio show as opposed to like a radio broadcast, but would the number of young people or new learners be able to make the same kind of a program?
Yes, absolutely, and it would be different, I think. And we do have radio programs being done. Where I come from in Hilo, we have a radio station every Sunday. It's not very, you know, we have a TV station now going on, the OEV TV. This island, I think the University of Hawaii, Manoa, has a weekly, I don't know if it's Sunday or something, radio program in Hawaiian. I think, though, maybe some new approaches need to be done. I don't think the content would be like this because it would be new speakers.
Yeah,
as I said, we don't have the native speakers. We're down to 40, and I would say most of them are what we would consider maybe semi-speakers. They're not of the same fluency and generation.
Regretfully, I have to say that we're out of time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mahalo.